lockdown. Now, we mentioned Alison Morton, Kent author who grew up in the west of the county. She's back today ahead of the launch of the second of her trilogy. Alison, how are you?
I'm very well, thank you. It's lovely to be back.
It's good to have you with us. We'll talk about the book in a moment or two, but I did mention earlier that this is, as an author, your fourth career, isn't it?
Yes, indeed. I think it's fourth, or have I lost count? Yes. I've been lots and lots of things. I suppose my latest incarnation that I'm known to Tunbridge Wells people was that I ran a small translation company. So I was quite active with the local Chamber of Commerce and Institute of Directors and all the things you do. Mm. And I was at the 2020 business show out at the showground. And it was pretty active in business life here. So that was my immediate, and I did that for about 15, 20 years, because I trained as a translator, which is quite strange career.
Well, it is strange, isn't it? How did you get into that then?
Well, it goes back, I'm afraid, it's one of those goes back jobs. When I was about five, and my father had a business here in the town, and he used to shut the shop for the summer, and we'd go to the south of France for 8 weeks. And my mother was a teacher, so of course that worked well. And I was sent out to play with the kids. Now, most of the kids are French. And when you go out to play, you want to play ball or you want to play tag or catch or whatever the game is. You don't care whether you're English or French. And after about a week or so, or 2 weeks maybe at the most, I was jabbering away in French, as a 5 or 6 year old would talk. And we did this every summer. And of course, I said, oh, yeah, we're in France. Okay, you talk differently. And that was it. So at school, I loved languages. I had French and German and Latin and Spanish and blah, blah, blah. And I tagged on a bit of Russian when I was in the sixth form. And I thought, right, I'm a language person, obviously. I just passed my maths O-level, so that was fine. I could get into university. Then you had to have a maths. And that was fine. And I went on to do French and German and economics at uni. And language has been with me all my career.
Now, do you think that would be the case for most of our kids? If they were exposed to languages early on, sort of 4, 5, 6, yeah, would that part of our brain click in more readily than when we're trying to be taught it at 9, 10, 11?
Definitely. The younger, the better. I mean, this is why bilingual children learn it so well, because their mum burbles away in whatever it is to them. And inside your brain, there's these little bits. I don't know what the technical names are. I've forgotten now. Long time since I did linguistics. But there are bits in your brain that hook on to language. And also, the shape of your mouth develops for the sounds that you speak, which is why most French people can't pronounce German very well, because they haven't got the trained muscles. And English people can pronounce German. Very strange. But your brain remembers it. Everybody's been on the day trip to France, and suddenly those little bits of French come back. You're in France, you're surrounded, you're in the milieu, everything's written in French, and it comes back. And everybody's experienced that. Now, that happens in a big way if you've learnt it as a small child. The earlier, the better. Definitely.
And is that why you live in France now? Because you mainly live in France,
mainly,
don't you?
Yeah, in there. It just seems natural. When I met my husband, I said, look, let's try a camping holiday in France. We were a bit skint, basically, young child. And not sure about this, camping, France, not sure about this. He'd been posted abroad as part of his job, but he wasn't quite sure, and he loved it. St. Paul on the Road to Damascus. And we started pressing our noses in the estate agent's windows and, look at that, you can get all that for 100,000. You know, this sort of went on for several years. And we decided, yeah, we'd do that when we retired. Up comes the spreadsheet. He's master of spreadsheets. And one day, 2008, he looked at it and said, do you know, I think we can do it. Because we wouldn't go without financial security. We don't all want to appear on a, if I may mention them, Channel 4 programme, Disaster Abroad.
Yeah.
So we did it. We could do it. We had bought a house a few years before because he was made redundant, had a big lump of money. So we bought the house then. And we just thought, yeah, we can do it. And my friend who's come to take the photos today sold my house for me.
Perfect.
So there we are. I mustn't mention her, but she's very well known.
Now, let's talk a bit about the book then. So, this is the second, and it's based very much on, we spoke a while back about the alternative history thriller. That is how it's billed here. What do you mean by alternative history?
Right. You're not looking at fantasy with swords and Tolkien and all that stuff. You're looking at a time, at a situation where history's just gone a little bit differently. I don't know if many readers will remember Robert Harris's Fatherland, where Hitler had won the Second World War, and it's a thriller set against a Germany that has risen again and is powerful. So in this, my scenario is some Romans left Rome in the 4th century. They went and built their own little mini country, and somehow they've survived through. By doing that, by being quite a powerful, an influential little country, little but powerful, they've changed the rest of the world's history. So it's an alternative system. A lot of it would be familiar to us, normal stuff, everyday stuff, but some of it wouldn't. Some of it might even disconcert us. But that's the background. It's not, it's more from a historical point of view. Alternative timeline.
And that, you know, reading some of the reviews for the first book is what people liked a lot, wasn't it? That they could latch on to the fact that they knew exactly what you were talking about, but it was slightly skewed.
A little skewed.
In some
absolutely.
Way.
Yes. And yeah. I think the familiar, you've got to keep quite a lot of it familiar, because a lot of people don't like sort of weird stuff or science fiction as such. This isn't science fiction, but it's definitely a little bit sideways, if you like. And people live in, hopefully, I've made it so that people live naturally in Romanova. They go to work, they have children, they drive, they have traffic jams, they have all the stuff we have. So I think I try to keep people in their normal, natural, everyday lives.
Speaking with local author Alison Morton, here's a woman who's had an interest in life. And obviously you've still got this vibrancy.
Oh,
you've still got this... You've got an enthusiasm for what you do, haven't you? I guess you need to have in order to drive any story on.
You definitely do. Writing is quite a physical thing. You think, oh yeah, I'll just sit down at the computer and go tap, 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 tap. Not quite as easy as that. Actually, if you sat down to type 100,000 words, that's quite an effort to actually think of them, the story, do all the research around it, because sometimes even for one sentence, you need to spend half a day researching, because if you make an allusion that's wrong, somebody out there will jump on it. So you actually maybe take 4 or 5 months doing the first 100,000 words, and that's just the beginning. Then you have to go back through it, check you've got right people in the right place. A doesn't know something before B does, and the plot follows through. So you've got to, that's your structural check. Then you go and work on that. Then you look and think, that's a bit sloppy, that paragraph, or I haven't quite got that description, or the dialogue's a bit iffy, and you've just got to adjust it and make it more natural, or chop bits out that are not necessary.
But you must have a tremendous faith in your own judgment.
It's a learned thing. When you first sort of... I took 3 years before I dare show my manuscript to anybody. Well, apart from my writing circle. Because you need to gain that confidence. You need to start putting a few bits out, getting criticism back. Nice criticism. I mean, not you a wonderful darling, but, well, if I were you, I'd have another look at this. You perhaps need to work on that. We go on courses, you go to classes, conferences, workshops. It's like any career, you've got to learn, do your apprenticeship. So after you suddenly get to a point and you think, that's not bad. Oh, okay, I'm not too embarrassed about this piece. And then you start writing fluently. I'm sure when you started broadcasting, the first few times you were going, oh my God, am I going to do this? Am I going to make a mistake? Am I going to drop my cup of tea over the keyboard? Am I going to fluff something? But after a while, you suddenly get into the ease of it. And not say you're brilliant, but you're, okay, I can do this now.
You feel competent.
Yeah, you're competent, that you might be at a reasonable starting point. And it just comes. Drafting number 4 book, because it is going beyond a trilogy, I have to say, I'm writing with more ease and fluency. I mean, I've written all my life. Being a translator, you write a lot. But it's now coming easier, although it's full of mistakes probably that need to be gone over. So it's like any career. You get better as you do it.
Do you get quicker as well?
Probably, because you can cut through the fluff. And you don't dilly-dally around. You think, right, get it down on paper, get it into the computer, and we'll sort it out later. So you stop hesitating. You've lost that, am I any good? Do I think, who do I think I am putting this out into the book?
It's really interesting hearing you say this, because so many people believe that, well, I've got a story within me, I want to write, and almost the technicals of writing it and getting it down on paper is secondary to the story coming out, isn't it? But
yes,
maybe that's putting the cart before the horse, isn't
it? Yeah, you have to. There are certain. I mean, what's about? You just draft a story, you write it, that's it. No, it's not quite. There are certain sort of structures that people like to read. They like to have the problem. Oh, the hero, heroine's in a problem, whether it's the environment, somebody else, whatever, the weather, who, and then they have to have a horrendous shock and lose stuff and lose a partner or their job or whatever. You have to get this hero or heroine into a bad place. Then they have to go through their story, and there's three or four critical points where they go have a red herring and it's all lost, or they lose, or something else happens. Then you go into a dark moment, a really black, where it's all terrible. And then the resolution, whether it's a confrontational thing or whatever, and then a little bit of a wind-up. Now, winding up the story, I didn't know any of that, although as a reader, that's what happens.
But you don't, as a reader, you don't see it happen.
You don't see. You're going, what's going to happen?
Yes.
Or on the television or film. But that is quite a definite structure to a story. And I learnt that on one of my courses. And how to describe things you wouldn't perhaps think need describing, but not dump it in a big lump. So all that craft, I reckon that's about 90% of it. But you still need a very strong story behind it. So that's it.
So give us all the details of your strong story, because it's just about to be launched, isn't it?
It is, on Wednesday, in Tunbridge Wells, obviously. And if I may mention them, at Waterstones. That's 7 o'clock, and everybody is welcome if you'd like to come along. There's a ticket price of £3, but you will get a glass of bubbly. Okay, so perfiditas, that means treachery or betrayal. So it's quite a hard sort of title, and it's on all levels. The heroine of Inceptio, the beginning, she comes back 6 years later. She's got a nice job. She just had a promotion. She's really happy. She's a soldier in the Praetorian Guard Special Forces. She's really happy. She's married to her lifelong love. She has 3 children. She's really happy. She's in life. Now, what could possibly go wrong? Of course.
Well, we know something's going to go wrong, because it's part of the technique.
Seriously wrong. Suddenly, a very small mystery blows out of all proportion, and a colleague tries to kill her. And another one tries to implicate her in a plot to bring down the government of Romanova. And she's in a bit of a bind, because if she goes to ask an old, not quite legal friend for help, she'll wreck her relationship with her husband, who's a bit jealous. If she takes matters into her own hands and operates illegally, the security services and the conspirators will be after her. And will she come out of it alive? And will she save the day as well? I'm afraid you'll have to buy the book.
It is a standalone book, as you said earlier. But, I said it was part of a trilogy. Apparently it's part of a series.
Well,
now.
I'm developing the series. People seem to quite like it, so I better write some more.
Alison, lovely to see you again.
And you
Thank
too,
you for
Pat.
Being with us at Radio
Thank
King.
You so much. It's been lovely being back.